I'm going to jump right into a couple of readings. My first reading is going to come from the Gospel of Matthew. It's just four more verses. I'm reading from chapter 23, verses 1 through 4. And I'm reading the New Revised Standard Version and the updated edition of that. Then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit on Moses' seat. Therefore, do whatever they teach and teach you and follow it, but do not do as they do, for they do not practice what they teach. They tie up heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on the shoulders of others, but they themselves are unwilling to lift a finger to move them." May we add blessing and understanding to the reading of those words. I also want to read an excerpt from a book that I've mentioned a couple of times, and I don't think I've ever read from it for you. It's by David Tenneman and Gabe Lyons. That's their book entitled Unchristian: What a New Generation Really Thinks About Christianity and Why It Matters. And in that book, they say this: "When outsiders claim that we are unchristian, it is a reflection of this jumbled and predominantly negative set of perceptions. When they see Christians not acting like Jesus, they quickly conclude that the group deserves an unchristian label, like a corrupted computer file or a bad photocopy. Christianity, they say, is no longer in pure form, and so they reject it. One quarter of outsiders say, therefore, most perception of Christianity is that the faith has changed for the worse. It has gotten off track and is not what Christ intended. Modern day Christianity no longer seems Christian."
Peter merely said, "Any kind of
Talking about how she was worried about this bad head cold she has, and all I know, I could have done half of that without a head cold, so thank you so much. And I've never heard that song, but I love the lyrics. It was fantastic. Thanks for sharing that very much. My message this morning is entitled, I Want My Religion Back. In January, I am traveling to San Diego for Progressive Christianity's annual in-person board meeting. And I have to tell you, I'm dreading it. Not the meeting. I love the people and the work that we do there in that organization. The part that I'm dreading is actually just something that frequently happens when you are traveling. You see, I hate answering that inevitable question that someone almost always asks you. What do you do for a living? I just don't like telling people I'm a minister. I actually tend to handle it this way. This person says, so, what do you do for a living? And I say, I'm a minister. I give an appropriate pause, and then I say, but not the kind you just pictured in your head. Sad. It is sad to that point, but honestly, it is actually worse than that. Like some of you, I can even be resistant to calling myself a Christian. You may or may not be surprised to learn that there are actually a lot of people who follow the teachings of Jesus who are also resist calling themselves Christian. A number of researchers over the last years and decades, including the one I just read from with David Kinnaman and Gabe Lyons, the unchristian reading, they found that the word Christianity has more negative connotations than positive ones. That's a problem. More negative than positive. At least when it comes to the mind of the general public. You want to, just for fun, try on a few of those connotations for size? They include things like hypocritical, irrelevant, anti-homosexual, judgmental, and you know what? That's enough. They could go on and it does, frankly. But it's a little depressing to think about, isn't it? It's a little depressing. One of my very first, or on my very first 3-month sabbatical, I decided that I was not going to go to church for 3 months. And I had never done that in my life. Not even more than a couple of Sundays in a row in my entire life at that point. And at that time, I have to admit, it worried me a little bit. It really did. I found that not only did I not need to be worried that I didn't actually miss church that much? Don't get me wrong. I really miss people, the actual church. But I simply didn't miss what church had become. I didn't miss the dogma. I didn't miss the hypocrisy. I didn't miss the judgment. I didn't miss the stuff that Jesus didn't like about organized religion during his day and age.
I mean, go figure.
So during my sabbatical, as I spent 3 months away from church, I was left with this thought. How am I supposed to follow the teachings of Jesus when the place that I'm told I'm supposed to do it invests so much energy in the stuff that Jesus didn't like about organized religion during his day and age? Isn't that ultimately counterproductive? It's no wonder so many people are walking away from church, never looking back, and doing so, sometimes finding happier lives. The reality is, when the rest of the world can rightfully look at the church and call it hypocritical, judgmental, and irrelevant, and say that it is much more defined by what it is against rather than what it is for, well, then the church is not doing a very good job at following the teachings of Jesus. My time away from church helped me see more clearly that the church is increasingly full of churchians rather than Christians. Churchians. It's become so tied up in the power, structure, and dogma of the organization that it has lost focus on the Christ part of Christian. All too frequently, it puts polity before people and trades love in for the letter of the law. So, I don't like telling people I'm Christian sometimes. It's not that I'm ashamed of being Christian. I'm not. Not at all. It's just that the word Christian comes with so much ugly baggage. Telling someone I'm a Christian means I must immediately follow it up with, it's not that kind of Christian. It's like saying, yeah, sure, those are some mind-bogglingly ugly suitcases, but I got the coolest stuff on the inside of them. No, really, I do. It's just not worth the effort. And frankly, I'm tired of lugging that ugly baggage around. Truthfully, I don't blame people who assume that if you're Christian, that you're anti-LGBT, anti-abortion, anti-equality, anti-other religions, and pretty much anti-anything else that one small but loud subset of Christianity finds offensive and threatening. It completely makes sense. It's why I frequently don't want to use the word to describe my own beliefs. I get it. I understand it. Who can blame people for thinking Christians are all anti-everything kind of people when you have politicians who present themselves as speaking for all Christians do things like accuse queer folks of threatening the sanctity of traditional marriage, of working to shut down abortion clinics, dehumanizing immigrants, and the list could go on and all. I get it. I really do. I get it. I don't want to be that kind of Christian. So, if that were the only option, I would opt out. Honestly, I would opt out. But I am not alone. As I mentioned, a whole slew of Christians are opting out. As recently as 2012, Pew Research study indicated that while the number of people who identify as Protestant or Catholic is decreasing, the number of those who consider themselves religious but identify with like no formal religious group, that is on the rise. An even earlier study by the Barna group defines a big part of the problem. It's what they say. People who aren't in the church, and many who are in the church, believe that the church is judgmental and hypocritical. And yet, when we looked at together, the findings of those two studies, they sort of make a lot of sense. I mean, an organization whose primary religious figure talk about love has become known for being judgmental against any group they simply don't like. Is it any surprise Christians are seen as hypocritical at times? Christians are being viewed as hypocritical because many, many actually are. Not all of us, of course, not all of us, but you wouldn't know that at all by watching mass media. Tragically, big media and most of its consumers have no interest in coverage of food pantries and other programs across the country that feed and take care of hundreds of thousands of people each month. I mean, honestly, I just want my religion back. Technically, it wasn't really taken from me. It's more like part of it has been hijacked and sort of held hostage inside of all that ugly baggage. Not surprisingly, things like politicians fear-mongering about queer folks, about abortion clinics and immigrants, that stuff gets big media's attention. Not surprising. I mean, let's face it. When the baggage carousel starts rolling around, you're going to notice the neon green designer bag with the word crazy written across it in pink. But that 26-inch wheeled suitcase in a sensible shade of gray, no one's paying attention to it. It doesn't get media coverage. Christians who want to be known more for their love rather than for what they stand over and against need to more fully acknowledge this reality and begin actively speaking out and working against it. What we mostly see in media isn't Christianity. It isn't. It's labeled as it, but it isn't Christianity. Christianity's core teachings are supposed to be found in the words of Jesus. The anti-everything Christianity we find on the television and radio, online, and print. That would remind Jesus so much more of the Pharisees than it would remind them of people actually following his teachings. You know, ultimately it's a power play. As Napoleon, I know it's not advised to quote Napoleon too much in a sermon, but as Napoleon once observed, religion is excellent stuff for keeping common people quiet. Religion is what keeps the poor from murdering the rich. When you see someone who claims to follow the teachings of Jesus and who has power or wants power, when they are saying things about Christianity that hurts other people, when they are creating divisions, when they state beliefs or support policies that marginalize already marginalized groups, when they say things that would allow one group of people to exert their will and beliefs on another group of people, you need to immediately question the sincerity of their beliefs, and more so, question their motivation. Here's the thing. Jesus would have advocated none of those attitudes or behaviors. However, they most certainly are tools through which those who already have power maintain their power while keeping those without power divided and bickering amongst themselves rather than focusing their attention on the small fraction of the rich who are nurturing systems that make life unnecessarily difficult for the rest of us, which is also something for which Jesus would not have been an advocate. He wasn't a fan of ugly baggage, particularly religious baggage. He confronted the Pharisees every time they tried to unload it onto him or others. If those of us who still consider ourselves Christians want our religion back, and I do, we're going to have to do the same thing. If we want a Christianity that doesn't come so unnecessarily cluttered with all of this ugly baggage, we are going to have to start standing up more consistently and begin challenging those power plays that are wrapped up in religion. Collectively, we need to more closely follow the lead of Jesus and lovingly confront those who want to turn the man called the Prince of Peace into a tool for dividing and marginalizing the country. Every time anyone tries to exclude a group of people they dislike in the name of God, we must pronounce the radical and inclusive love of God. Somewhat oddly, what much of Christianity has become and how it impacts people's willingness to give churches a chance again is actually one of the pieces of this church's future I'm very excited about. You see, one of the things that folks need to see from churches is that they aren't just like what so many churches have become, being known for what they are against, being known for being judgmental. Churches that look and largely function like churches, that look like and function like churches have for the most recent past, don't exactly give those who have walked away from church the confidence that anything is any different anyway. While I, along with many of you, will remember fondly everything this church has been, and will feel a bit of sadness with letting go of it, I am equally excited about eventually being back in this building and having a new way to go about ministry and the resources to make a significant difference in this community for those most in need. Today, we will vote on our response to an offer being made on the church. It's a good offer. And it will necessarily change some of how we do church. And I, for one, think it will give us new life in a world where churches struggle to let the world know that they are not like what far too many churches have become. That they are taking back their religion. All the way back to the loving and inclusive teachings of Jesus. Thank you.
Jesus, friend of sinners, we have strayed so far away. We cut down people in your name, but the sword was never ours to swing. Jesus, friend of sinners, the truth becomes so hard to see. The world is on their way to you, but they're tripping over me. Always looking around, but never looking up. I'm so double-minded. A point I faint with dirty hands and a heart divided. Oh, Jesus, friend of sinners, open our eyes to the world at the end of our pointing fingers. Let our hearts be led by mercy. Help us reach with open hearts and open doors. Oh, Jesus, friend of sinners, break our hearts for what breaks yours. Jesus, friend of sinners, the one who's waiting in the sand. Make the righteous turn away, and the stones fall from their hands. Help us to remember we are all the least of these. Let the memory of your mercy bring their people to their knees. Nobody knows what they're for, only what they're against. When they judge the wounded, what if we put down our signs, cross over the lines, and love like you did? Oh, Jesus, friend of sinners, open our eyes to the world at the end of our pointing fingers. Let our hearts be led by mercy. Help us reach with open hearts and open doors. Oh, Jesus, friend of sinners, break our hearts for what breaks yours. You love at fool's cost. You reach for the outcast, for the leper and the lame. You're the reason that you came, Lord. I was that fool's cost, and I was the outcast. But you died for sinners just like me, a grateful leper at your feet. 'Cause you are good. You are good. And your love endures forever. You are good. You are good. And your love endures forever. I was the outcast.
Let's bow our heads together. Far too frequently, we find ourselves taking on the moniker of Christian, but not following through with the behavior which should accompany that name. We gossip about our neighbor. We dispense judgment against those who are different from us. We leap to negative conclusions about others when their behavior doesn't match our expectations. We turn a blind eye to those in need when it seems too inconvenient or costly to respond to their need. In short, we sometimes do the opposite of what Jesus would have done, and yet we wish to be known as his followers. Let us become better followers. Let us continue to grow a love that knows no limits or boundaries. May we open our eyes to the depth of grace extended to us, and may we be inspired to extend to others that same kind of grace. May we live lives that are known for their love and for the way they actively pursue sharing grace with every person we meet. Amen. Students, blessed and may you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, knowing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life, and may your words and your actions bring that love and happiness to all of those we meet. Thank you.